I'm Brian Lacey. In this audiocast, I'm going to discuss therapeutic approaches to IBS with constipation. Let me begin with a case study of a 32-year-old woman with a 9-month history of constipation associated with abdominal pain and bloating. The patient states that she has a bowel movement about every 3 days. She states that her stools are hard and that she needs to strain in order to pass them. She reports occasional abdominal pain that is alleviated by having a bowel movement, but says that she has a consistent feeling of incomplete evacuation and feels bloated most of the time. She's used fiber products and OTC laxatives to relieve her symptoms of constipation, but with inconsistent results. The patient also says she's a little bit concerned about becoming dependent on the use of stimulant laxatives. So when we think about this patient and our approach to the management of IBS, think about patient-centered care, meaning what do your patients really want from you? Well, I think they want 5 important things. First, they want you to listen. They want to get their story out and have you hear that story. They want to be educated about their condition. They want reassurance about what their condition is and what it means to them. They want a positive diagnosis of IBS. And of course, they want symptom improvement with a nice explanation about what treatment options are available. Fortunately, in this day and age, we have a number of different medical treatments available for IBS-C. And I'll go through these in turn, but this can range from diet to fiber products to probiotics and osmotic agents, also chloride channel activators, guanylate cyclase C activators, and even alternative therapies. But when you think about what treatment option for your patient, it's important to understand we don't have a black and white algorithm for all patients. So you need to think about how severe are your patient's symptoms. As an example, somebody with more mild symptoms may just need education and reassurance, that positive diagnosis, and some simple lifestyle changes. Those with more moderate symptoms, meaning it's really starting to impinge on their personal and professional life, likely will need some pharmacologic therapy and maybe even a discussion about stress management, and don't be surprised you'll need to see those patients in follow-up. Those with severe, debilitating daily symptoms frequently have significant coexisting psychological distress, and you'll need to incorporate that into your treatment strategy. So let's start simply and think about dietary therapy. And although there are multiple diets that have been suggested for the treatment of IBS, really there are 2 that are well studied. The first is a low gluten diet, and the second is a low FODMAP diet. And although patients frequently employ a low gluten diet, it's really important to understand that when we think about the world's literature, in terms of randomized controlled trials, looking at the benefits of a low-gluten diet for IBS, there are only 2 studies that met our criteria when we performed a recent meta-analysis, and this involved a total of 111 patients. And what was found was that a gluten-free diet was associated with a reduced risk for having IBS symptoms. That said, keep this in mind, that although many patients try a low-gluten diet, there's still not a lot of scientific data to support it. What is more commonly used is a low FODMAP diet, and FODMAP stands for fermentable oligodisaccharide, monosaccharide, and polyols. And basically, FODMAPs are foods that tend to ferment in the GI tract. And when they ferment, they can cause gas and bloating. And when we think about FODMAPs, there are a number of biologic reasons why they could improve some IBS symptoms. FODMAPs increase osmotic load to the GI tract, and this can accelerate GI transit. In addition, when these high FODMAP-containing foods get to the colon, they may ferment. They can increase the microbiome content of the GI tract. They produce a lot of gas, stretch, bloating, and that can cause pain as well. And so many IBS patients, by removing FODMAPs, feel better. A recent meta-analysis looking at 7 randomized controlled trials found that a low FODMAP diet was associated with reduced overall symptoms with a relative risk of 0.69, which is pretty good. What was found, though, is there's a lot of heterogeneity between these trials. And although several of these trials had a reasonable number of patients, that overall the quality of the studies were just not very good. So this again highlights the fact that FODMAP diets can help some patients, but there's still not a lot of great literature supporting it. In addition, it's important to teach your patients that prolonged use of the FODMAP diet can lead to micronutrient deficiencies, such as deficiencies in calcium and retinol and some of the B vitamins. So tell your patients the low FODMAP diet may help, but it's only for short-term use, not long-term use. What about bulking agents for those patients with mild IBS-C symptoms? And certainly the literature would show that adding fiber to the diet may help IBS symptoms. But it's important to understand that not all fiber is the same. As an example, bran does not help. In addition, insoluble fiber compared to soluble fiber was not more effective, and many fiber products can make bloating worse. So certainly if your patient has IBS-C and is fiber deficient, adding soluble fiber is reasonable, but don't be surprised bloating worsens. What about probiotics? A lot of patients like to use probiotics. They're over-the-counter, they don't need a prescription, they're relatively inexpensive and thought to be safe. And there are a number of reasons why probiotics might help, but we really don't know how they do help some IBS patients. However, when we performed a recent meta-analysis of 53 separate studies involving probiotics in patients with IBS, what we learned was that probiotics are barely better than placebo at improving global symptoms of IBS or abdominal pain. So individually, probiotics may help some patients, but globally, they're not great drugs. What about your patients using polyethylene glycol? So there is data from one study showing that polyethylene glycol, sold commercially as Glycolax, may help some patients with IBS-C symptoms, but just the constipation part. So it's important to understand that if you treat somebody with polyethylene glycol, constipation may get better, but not the abdominal pain. And remember, abdominal pain is the predominant symptom in IBS, and that's why your patient comes to see you. So what other treatment options do we have? What about using the chloride channel activator, lubiprostone? Lubiprostone has been on the market for more than a decade. It's been shown to be efficacious and safe. And what we know is that lubiprostone can improve IBS-C symptoms, including global symptoms of pain, constipation, and bloating, but also individual symptoms of constipation. And that's certainly a reasonable treatment option for your patient. What about another class of drugs, such as a guanylate cyclase C agent, such as linaclotide? And linaclotide is FDA approved for the treatment of IBS with constipation. When tested in large, randomized, placebo-controlled studies, linaclotide was shown to be far superior to placebo at improving global IBS symptoms, and especially symptoms of constipation. What we learned from these large randomized placebo-controlled studies is that benefits of constipation typically improve within the first week. However, the benefits for pain take longer. So a great teaching point for your patient is if you use linaclotide for your IBS-C patient, let them know that symptoms of constipation will improve usually within the first week, but it may take longer for symptoms of abdominal pain to improve. Placanotide is the new drug on the market, and this is a 16 amino acid peptide that also stimulates guanylate cyclase C receptors. It's FDA approved for IBS-C just about a year ago and for chronic idiopathic constipation as well. And what the data has shown in large randomized placebo-controlled studies is that patients randomized placanotide at 3 milligrams each day had a greater overall response to global IBS symptoms of pain, constipation, and bloating compared to those randomized to placebo. In addition, if we looked at just symptoms of constipation or just symptoms of abdominal pain, placanotide once again was better than placebo. So in summary, when we think about treatment options for IBS with constipation, we now have multiple treatment options available. When you evaluate these patients, try to understand their symptom severity, as patients with mild symptoms may just need education and reassurance and lifestyle changes, while those with moderate or severe will likely need some pharmacotherapy. Don't forget, focus on the basics. Listen to the patient, educate them, reassure them that this is something we can deal with. Remember, too, that when you recommend a medication, a one-day, a one-week trial is not enough, that all trials should be a minimum of at least 4 to 6 weeks. And also, what's hopeful for patients is that new treatment options will be available within the next few years.